You are listening to 2ZQ Hot Takes, where we discuss issues both big and small. I am your host, the very handsome Tim Kirk, and this time I'll be reading more from my semi-autobiographical novel, I'm Just Making It Up As I Go Along and Things Haven't Been Working Out As Well As I Intended, and I don't know even the chapter number anymore. Well, I was going to start off with something else, but I'm starting off with just brief recollections of two things that had a tremendous impact on my life growing up, and how it played out was something that, of course, could not be foreseen. And also, it's not an excuse, but it is an explanation for a lot of my self-destructive behavior. One was when I was a kid and I got sick and I was subjected to ECT or electroshock therapy against my will. I didn't even know it was going to happen. Of course, I would not willingly subject myself to it, but I was. It was cold. It was cruel. And there's a lot to talk about there. And also being gang raped by six other boys on multiple occasions in high school. And having that dismissed out of hand by people who were in charge because it was a place that would not tolerate anybody even trying to broach the subject. And that has an impact on you, and you don't really have any sense of reference to scale it out or figure out what it means or what it's going to do to you. What are the possible consequences of this? And it was... difficult for me, but those are all before this happened, and I'm going to start talking about the continuation of the experience of subjecting myself to some very stupid choices. So it has been a continuing part of my earthly experience. I get somewhere, and I get stepped on. I don't want to do what other people do. I have the suck-up, pretentious phoniness and the planted smiles and forced grins of the happy talk and subtle layers of bullshit that come out of the mouths of everyone who wants success for not only money, to buy it or to lord it, all the fuck over everyone else who has snubbed them or mistreated them or whatever their animus. I don't have that. I do have a deep-seated revenge-based motivation, but I get more of the schadenfreude thing than motivation when that starts to happen to others, and then that bothers me. So I don't want people who sicken me to succeed, but I get sickened when they fail and I just flail around going nowhere. I want the money and the power and the influence and the luxury, but despise the superficiality and pretension. I do enjoy the finer things, but not in the presence of those I do not trust or like. While I have the deep-seated desire to flaunt it and conspicuously consume it in front of them at the same time. I also want to make those who hurt me feel exactly what they have done to me, and I don't consider myself anyone who has done anything to hurt others intentionally. But I have, and I need to repent for that. I just want those who fucked me over to pay and to be publicly humiliated. Is that too much to ask? Just going down isn't enough. I know their true personalities and the sides they think they are hiding. I see right through all of that shit. You get that from watching people drop pretension when they pursue their basest desires, like using drugs and having sex with strangers they want to remain strangers with. You also see people's basic nature at the flea market. It is the common denominator. Most people are real, anyway. They don't have to be saints. Just don't be assholes. I don't think that is a good motivator. It drives me to an ugly place. I do know that so many people I trusted turned out to be full of shit, and people who trusted me have been deeply disappointed in my character and efforts or lack thereof. I have been betrayed. I fucking hate that. But does that qualify as a basis of a motivation? Revenge? That can't be good for the souls or whatever it is inside of me that feel tied up in knots and all ugly. Is it my conscience? Why do I bother with these people I dislike so very much? I do my best to avoid them. I really want an incredible stroke of good luck and good fortune. That would be a good start for me. I want to remain incognito or under the radar or low profile or however it is you go about being rich and happy and no longer need to do all the menial aspects of life that really wear you down. When you neglect them, it shows. When you do them, it beats the shit out of you. When you are around people who get high while you are not, you see them become less of themselves. I have never seen anyone become enhanced. Drinking makes you more social but less discreet, and you lose yourself after a few. Smoking weed makes you dull. Coke makes you a lying asshole. Opioids make you a zombie. I speak from first-hand experience myself. People love to put a good buzz on. Life is hard for a lot of people, and this is how they cope, or think they cope. Indulging in recreational drugs that provide artificial brain stimulation in short, powerful bursts just cannot be good for you, especially when you inhale them, and they become absorbed into your sinuses and the gray matter your sinuses abut. Yeah, it's not just going up your nose. What's right next to your nose? Your brain. It is self-destruction. It is addicting. It is painful and powerful and expensive and wasteful. I think about the lives that were wasted. They never got to experience what the rest of us did, for good or bad. They just got cut short and that was it. Truly tragic. They did not get to be the social animals they wanted to be, but were introverted until they got high, and then they weren't even themselves. But a third thing happens somewhere in between your high self and your inner self. It is what you have become in the eyes of others. They think of you in very two-dimensional terms. Sometimes they are great and quite flattering. Other times they are disdainful and unpleasant. But then that is now part of you that you might have to live down or live up to. We don't ever know unless we are truly wise. And wisdom is usually born of pain, in my experience. It's like the lyrics to Truckin' by the Grateful Dead. Well, in some distinct isolated sets of circumstances. Then again, most of our lives occur in distinct isolated sets of circumstances. I just go back to those I miss, those I failed, those I regret not telling important things about them they needed to know. They were worthy. They were fine. They were good. They were my friends, and I needed to be a better friend. I regret these failures every day, all day. I'm only human, but these failures make me feel like I am less than who I should have been and who I should be. I can say that living in drug-induced squalor, no matter the potency, and the exemption of material expense, was something I am not proud of. This was a dereliction of my duty to myself. It didn't and doesn't matter that it was rockstar quality coke. Who gives a shit? So many people died, went to jail, their lives were upended, or they moved on and away in the fog of all of that. Clear thinking was not possible. I lived in a state of delusion. It is not anything to be proud of. I carried around the impression that I was privileged and got to indulge in all of the base gratification of desire that was artificially implanted in my mind and body. So many people moved away from me. They wanted nothing to do with me. I was and still am such an immature child, full of insecurity and stupidity and bluffing bravado. I don't blame any of them for going out of their way to avoid me. I am too weak of a person to even offer any type of apology that would actually resonate and qualify. It doesn't lend me to like myself at all. Such an obvious twit. And that is paying myself a compliment. I need a lot of deep introspection. I am not fond of looking deep into myself and cataloging my weaknesses and failure points. Most people did not use cocaine while sitting in the parking lot of a home goods store, and not being in the proximity of drugs was a nagging, anxiety-producing hole burning right in the middle of you. We had to do this and get out of there as soon as possible and act like we had just committed some sort of big caper. After we went through a routine process most other people take for granted. But since we were engaging with the Straits, it became an odyssey, even if the goal and results were meager. Meager being comparable to something like working chairs as opposed to plush, comfy chairs. This sounds strange, but the evening before his funeral, which was ostensibly a get-together to mourn his untimely demise, what should have been an extremely loud clarion wake-up call to cease all self-destructive substance abuse devolved into a convoluted series of incongruous, nonsensical excuses to continue using cocaine in his honor. Imagine. We, meaning the other cokeheads, who were part of the restaurant orbit and not the drug dealing place I formerly lived in, were sporting these lines of coke, which was far inferior to the shit I had been using before I quit. Far, far inferior. And this is somehow a testament to his greatness that we, who are not yet dead from drug abuse, are using the same drugs that contributed to his downfall in his honor. That makes such good sense. Reminds me of the guy who goes to the shrink and complains about his job. It stinks and I get no respect. The shrink asks what he does. He says, I clean up elephant droppings at the circus. The shrink asks, why don't you quit? The guy says, what, and give up show business? Now, I had not been using cocaine for a substantial amount of time at this point, but I had been in the proximity of very many people who still did. I think my will was pretty steel. The next day, since I was the only one not hungover or still fucked up from the heavy drug use of the night before, since I had snapped myself out of that funk many, many months before, I was bestowed the honor of being the head pallbearer. I knew it because I was the only one of his asshole friends who actually wore a suit, the sensitive one. When it came to move the coffin, which was on a gurney, I had to lead a team of weeping young males to the correct path, but I had to hold on to the casket and walk backwards. So I took a wrong turn. We wound up in the incorrect place, a dead end. What a metaphor. I said, my friend, the titular chef, would love this, and everybody laughed. We were then directed by the funeral director to the correct loading dock for the casket to be moved to the hearse. That was a morning, all right. That afternoon, we skipped the funeral, which was just with family, and we went to the beach. At one point, we looked up in our grief and noticed that there was an aura around the sun. So we all decided it was him saying farewell. Or for deadheads, fare thee well. That's when I first heard the deadhead motto. When I die, bury me deep, put two speakers at my feet, put a turntable at my head, and crank the grateful fucking dead. Well, that didn't have much impact and it didn't revive him. It was just something clever. Or sounded appealing to me as a deadhead. By then, I had been living in a cottage closer to work and had been on the wagon since St. Patrick's Day night, after I had two becks dark at the end of the shift and came to the conclusion that I was swimming in a sewer. I did not like or trust or respect the people I was surrounded by, with a few exceptions. Zero moral or ethical compass. And it was a free-for-all of two-bit chiseling, sleazy, larcenous lowlifes. It made learning fucking Ruthie a lot easier because it was ideal subject matter to draw from. Yeah, I acted. I was pretty good. I also had a few white room moments, as I just recently learned they referred to. So much for that. Whenever I looked at these people from that moment on, I saw a nihilistic vacuum, completely self-interested and on autopilot for automatic justification or rationalization of every morally ambiguous position, act or opinion, perspective or disposition. They just didn't give a damn about anything but grubbing the next steak they can get their hands on. It never mattered what they said, who they said it to, what they did, how they did it. Why or any other reason to base decisions and actions on? Just blind, crass, callous desire. Like elitist gaze, only straight. Dull and really fucking obvious. God, I just hated living there. It was a depressing place. It was industrial and ugly with insipid, lowbrow, vulgar Philistines. I was one of them. There were two brothers who worked there who were immigrants and were very fine, smart, funny guys. they are absolved of any and all ill will. To the rest of them, the world outside their little pocket or a corner of the sky was just something on television. They hated the city. They only wanted to satisfy urges. It wasn't even that they resented any degree of sophistication. They could just not see the point, and anything that did not reinforce their blinkered view was beyond them. Creativity to them was something tedious, like arts and crafts time at elementary school, mediocre, predictable, and obvious. It was not using 50-cent words. It was stale, trite, banal cliches done with a new coat of lacquer. And they weren't all that familiar with the usage of words like cliché either. Ugh. Talking about anything abstract was viewed as pretentious. I remember that I was reading about how directions for consumer products were drummed up and created, and I expressed that I somehow knew that someone was assigned the task of writing directions on how to use shaving cream. I was met with blank-faced, dead-eyed stares. It had to be tangible to them, or they just didn't give a shit. I was tending bar one night, and one guy was having a pleasant chat with me, you know, as bartenders do, and we were talking about Victor Borger. And after he left for the evening, she, the owner, told me that I should be glad that I had someone to talk to, because I talked to somebody about Victor Borger. Another guy was a well-known session musician, and he had a fantastic story about the ups, downs, trials, travails, successes, and failures of his high-profile life, and they just blew him off. And he was a great guy to hang out with, a mensch. They would not know what the word mensch means either. They already knew other local musicians, so this guy didn't matter. He was renowned among peers, and he still had an industry recognition factor. Made no impression on them whatsoever. People who did remarkable things were unknown and summarily dismissed. One night, a high-level political player who was not a local dropped in with his date for a drink. I recognized him, and we chatted. I walked outside and immediately knew which car was his car. It was the most expensive one parked in front. He was a newsmaker. His name was in every New York paper most days of the week. Absolutely none of them had any idea who he was, and he had a very high-level government position. Meh. I would become stressed and then told to just go with the flow. My internal response was always yes, but what if the flow is a toilet being flushed into a larger sewer, which is what it felt like I was doing? I could never say that out loud. I could not admire a single person I was involved with at all. It made me look hard and deep within myself. I was in ruins, and this compounded my feelings of hopelessness and isolation. They were really twisted, cruel people, mocking anyone about a sensitivity, and then performing an unflattering impression of them when they are not present is cruel. I'm guilty of doing it too, and once you realize that the people you trusted can't be trusted to not mock you behind your back, it kind of hits you somewhere in the firmament. Your spine stiffens a bit, and you come to the realization that you are awful as well, and you are stopping this conduct for once and for all starting now. Even if you weren't as drastic or severe as the others, you now know that it hurts. And if it doesn't, specific people probably, because they have a thick skin, and that is either because they grew up this way or they have had a lot of unpleasant experiences in life, which has hardened their skins, especially around the formerly tender spots. They all knew I was gay, but I was not ready to come out yet. Definitely not to them. They didn't care. They were cruel. At least one of them did a popular impression of me when I was not there, supposedly imitating me having an orgasm. They decided to somehow humiliate me for laughs. They get one of the cooks, a girl who worked there, to fuck me. They offered her $500. She accepted. The plan was to have her fuck me and have me go down on her, and one of them would then burst into my home and take a picture of me having sex and mock me for it. She also had a boyfriend who she said she wanted to make him happy, and he wanted to have sex with a guy because he was curious. So they decided that they were going to get me to have sex with him too and burst in on us and take my picture and humiliate me. The night she wanted to hang out longer than usual, I walked her outside to her car, and her boyfriend was sitting in his car with the engine running to keep the heater going, waiting to be invited into my place so he could try gay sex for the first time. I was told to ignore what I saw. That wasn't very nice. She tearily confessed afterwards, I was broken. Has it negatively impacted my cognitive abilities? Has it short-circuited my mind? Do I suffer from Dame Bramage? I think so. Was I stupid in the first place? Yes. I doubt I will ever know why I so desperately wanted the approval of those who couldn't care less if I lived, died, was crushed by a boulder, or blown to smithereens. I was precocious in front of adults and did not like most kids my age, and they did not like me. I was friends with a lot of girls, but the boys were dull, except the ones who wanted to take their clothes off with me. They were fun. Most boys were bullies to me, or they were just plain boring. They acted like every stupid thing they did was earth-shattering, while it was just a plodding bore. I still don't like most kids my age. They still don't like me. It's not like this is a standoff or anything. It's stressful to be around people you are either intimidated by or just cannot stand. It's also stressful to be around anybody who makes your life difficult. So before I go any further, I am reminded of people who I see post on social media who had their shining moments in the culture of the past of Manhattan, a culture that has gone with the wind, evaporated, disintegrated, and has been blown to smithereens, but they still talk about their glory days as if it was still relevant or actually still a thing. Every place they talk about is long gone. Most of the people they refer to are gone, either dead or moved away or slipped into ignominy, and there is virtually no trace of the subculture. They act as if it is still thriving and vibrant, but it's dead. The people they are being exposed to have zero interest in them. It would be like rolling out supermodels and American gladiators on hospital beds with IVs sticking out of their arms. What are we looking at these old people for? Who thought up this disaster? It's like being a stand-up comedian in the suburbs. Most of them withered and faded away, but there are some who still insist that their better days are ahead and coming soon. It's like getting a Liza or Cher impersonator for your backyard party. The same old people and the same old getups, but nobody knows who the hell they are. I have lived here for over 30 years, and they have lived here for less than 10. Yet over 20 years later, they act like they are still vibrant New Yorkers. People who live in my building have to decipher and interpret what I mean when I mention anywhere because it has a different meaning, name, use, or significance to them. And there are things that are new and oblivious to me that have no meaning or significance to me, but are ingrained into their worlds that I mention, refer, or say to in conversation, and rightly so, because their perceptions, mentality, motivations, stimuli, social constructs, identities are all quite different, even though we inhabit much of the same space, because local landmarks have changed and I still use old reference points or names or vernacular that is obsolete, and it should be. I am old school. I am not hardcore old school. I am just because I am old. Nothing purposely intentional. Like a guy who refuses to play any video games past 8-bit. I just don't bother or can't keep up. These others who pretend like they are still able to affect an attitude are relatively rural, one-time city dwellers who almost never make it down to the city, and when they come, they have no place to go to for the most part. Their city has gone. Their entire world has gone. All they talk about is what used to be there. So I don't want to dwell on the past and keep hanging on my horrid drug-fueled existence, but this is what happened, and I am receiving a jolt of catharsis by writing this all down in drafts. It's sort of like walking around the East Village and expecting to see Steve Buscemi, John Lurie, Jim Jarmusch, or Madonna, and be walking around the Life Cafe or Benny's Burritos or Telephone Bar or Dan Lynch or CBGB's or the Mud Club. Just a different decade or two, but demolished, steam shoveled, paved over, rebuilt, and replaced several times over. I remember those days before I went cold turkey. I had my own experience or my own version of the times. I recall so many of my experiences with fondness, and so many were to me quite intense. One time I was in a bar on Church Street by Canal, very close to the Reggae Lounge. I loved the Reggae Lounge because it reminded me of the Blues Brothers. Every beer was poured into a plastic solo cup by the bartenders in front of the purchaser because they would not give patrons bottles, since they usually wound up throwing them at the stage. What a trip. Kramer was there on Seinfeld. Pretty close approximation. This bar we were in, my partner in crime at the time and I, who has now become all churched up and has left the New York metro area for the Southwest, first in Texas and now in Arizona, it was a stop on our route and we would have a preparatory routine. We would drive up to the Heights, this is in the 80s, and buy at least an 8-ball. I was told to stay in the car a few times for my own safety. I did. Other times were extraordinary. The culture of people who sell drugs and use them, and are obvious about it, was, back in the day, a bit on the unstable side, but they somehow had an actual functional culture, even though they were caught up in the dissonance of drug intoxication as part of their culture. It is just not safe for people who fit too many anathemic profile points. You know, white, young, middle class, suburban, stupid, etc. One time we were in the middle of a large empty room with graffiti like doodles all over the walls and a plain, somewhat beaten up table. We walked around and stood still, mostly because I suddenly made myself aware of the notion that making a false move might trigger gunplay. We visited another dealer on a separate occasion and saw that his pregnant, coke-addicted girlfriend was busy pretending to live a normal, ordinary life with virtual mountains of cocaine in front of her. And she was a coke addict and pregnant. And her boyfriend was, say, the vivacious host for the proceedings. This was a scary moment. As we walked into the room with the mountain of cocaine, just like a cartoon prop, I noticed a grotto alcove type of thing with bodega candles and statuettes of religious features of Christendom. I also noticed one guy on his knees, dressed like Che Guevara, with a little beard, a mustache, and a beret, in fatigues, praying while he had a set of rosary beads wrapped around his hands and the machine gun he was gripping while his eyes were closed and he was rocking back and forth in prayer at the same time in the same room as this mountain of cocaine. I began to feel slightly uncomfortable. Well, we did our best to diplomatically say our thanks and make pleasant small talk so that we could leave graciously and be on our way. The first stop was usually the nearest rest stop exit on the Henry Hudson Parkway so we could take a leak. But on a number of occasions, I was not as popular as I would have liked to have come across to these fellows, and we were followed for extensive periods of time through clogged neighborhood traffic until we were all the way on the west side. And just keep looking in the rearview mirrors until we had faded from their view or something else or someone else caught their attention. And we were kind of nervous about that. This one time, I must have set off a bad vibe sensor beam, and after what it seemed like an uneventful purchase, I was ambling my way to the car. My friend quietly told me through gritted teeth, "Walk fast." I asked why. He said, "They want to kill you because you're white." Oh, I understood and picked up the pace. We got to the car, and of course, there were several emergency vehicles slowing down traffic due to an incident, so it was a wee bit on the tense side until we made our way to the rest stop and peed. So, we are in this bar on Church Street, which had a barber's chair in the middle of the back of the bar so that patrons could pretend they were getting haircuts and shaves while they were really doing hardcore shots and beers and stuff like that, near the reggae lounge, a few doors down or maybe even next door to it. And we were doing coke in the men's room when two big, dense-bodied guys walk into the stall next to ours, and four men in two stalls. Oh, come on now. I had to open my big mouth and say something stupid to the guys in the next stall, who demanded that I identify myself, and they confronted me about using cocaine. The scruffier, thicker of the two fellows looked me dead in the eye and pulled out and snapped open the switchblade in front of my face, right up to the top of my upper lip. He then pulled out a Ziploc bag full of cocaine, well over an ounce, and dipped the entire blade into the bag of coke. He then dared me to snort it off the blade. I did. The blade was just about touching my septum, and that scenario could have taken many different turns, but because of my naivete, big mouth, and sheer nerve, the guy not only dipped the entire blade into the bag again, which was an enormous amount of coke to do and two long snorts in the first place, but he laughed at my chutzpah, and we all laughed and became fast friends for the moment. Me, mostly nervously, but it fit with the boundaries of the scene we were all in, and we had a good time. Then we all got the hell out of there, and I was super duper coked up after snorting at least 1 to 1.5 grams, at the very least, of which I did in a few seconds. Whoopee! At this point in my intoxication, all the rules of life were just background noise, and I was just full of them and the imposed artificial bravado. I was numbing my mind in some sort of trance. Thanks for listening. See you next time. And as the kiddies say, peace out.